Today on The Journey.
And whatever you're going through, He is going to use it. He doesn't waste our time. Whatever you're going through, He is using it to make you into the man and the woman He needs you to be to fulfill His purpose in your life.
When it seems your world is spinning out of control, where is the handle to steady yourself? What truth is there that will make it all bearable? In the next half hour, Ron Moore offers that handle through the true story of a man who knows your pain. Also, along with today's message, we want you to have a copy of Ron's book, Ignite. In it, you'll discover a step-by-step spiritual journey that leads to a heart ignited by grace. It's available for a gift of any amount at ronmoore.org. Your gift today will help further this ministry of developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now here's Ron with the message, Joseph on the Journey.
We're told in the New Testament, this verse from the Apostle Paul, that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love Him, to those who are called according to His purpose. God causes everything, all things, to work together for good. I just want to remind us as Christians that wherever we are on the journey, whether we're in great times or difficult times, whether we are in times of confusion or times of clarity, whether we are on mountaintop experiences, spiritually speaking, or in deep valleys, that God is using every day of your life to work all things together for His purpose. And He has a specific purpose for you. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 37. And as you're turning there, let me set the context for today's passage. We considered a man named Jacob. Later, God changed his name to Israel. Jacob, you'll remember, had two wives. Leah, whom he had been tricked into marrying, and Rachel, the love of his life. Through Leah, Jacob had 10 sons. Rachel couldn't have children for many years, and finally God blessed her with 2 children. The first one was Joseph, and the second, she died during childbirth having, his name was Benjamin. And with Joseph, Jacob, his father, broke the cardinal rule of parenting, showing favoritism to one child over another. Now, in Jacob's defense, James Dobson and Focus on the Family wasn't around at that time, so he was kind of on his own. But still, look at chapter 37, verse 3. Now, Israel, Jacob, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. Besides being a very beautiful and very expensive coat, sometimes we call it the coat of many colors, this gift set Joseph apart as the son who was going to receive his father's blessing and going to receive his father's inheritance. And you can imagine the family dynamic that caused. Look at verse 4. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Think of the tension in the family. They hated him so much that when they saw him, they didn't think one kind word about him, nor did they say one kind word to him. Now, if Jacob's parental favoritism was not bad enough, Joseph added fuel to the fire due to his personality. Look at verse 2 of chapter 37. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flock with his brothers, the son of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. So Joseph came and he tattletales, as it were, on his brothers, brings this bad report about them. If you look at the early days of Joseph, he is a poster child for a spoiled brat. And one day, Joseph has a dream that he tells his brothers about. And in essence, this dream says that, guys, in a few years, you're going to be bowing down before me. And I am going to rule over you. And guess what that made them do? They hated him all the more. They developed an intense jealousy. And here's my first point. God uses our family experience to prepare us for our journey of purpose. Now, I am not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but we are all smart enough to know that our family of origin has tremendous impact on our lives. God uses our birth order. He uses a relationship with our parents. He uses a relationship with our siblings to form us into the person He needs us to be for our journey of purpose. Sometimes very positive experience that we can build upon. Sometimes negative experience that we need to get over and need to get through. But God uses it all, doesn't He? The verse says He uses everything for good to those who love Him, those who are called according to His purpose. So instead of being paralyzed by what has happened in your past, see how God wants to use that. Because He has a specific purpose for you. His purpose. One day the brothers were out tending the sheep and Joseph went out to join them. They saw him coming at a distance and they hated him so much, they decided they were going to kill him. Reuben, the oldest son, said, "Let's not kill him. Let's just take him and throw him in this cistern, this large receptacle for holding water." Good for Joseph, there was no water in it at the time or he would have drowned. Some of you in your journey may be sitting in the equivalent of a cistern today. Alone? Separated from those you love? How in the world is God going to use that? How in the world is He going to bring good from that? Now, Joseph was in this predicament in large part because of his own doing, his own personality, his own boasting, his spoiledness. Surely, if you're in a cistern because of your own shortcomings, God can't use that, can He? For Joseph, things got worse. Look at chapter 37, verse 25. As the brothers sat down to their meal, Joseph is still in this cistern. They looked up and they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, myrrh, and they were on their way down to Egypt. So the brothers said, "Let's not kill him. Let's just sell him into slavery. He was born with such a silver spoon in his mouth. If we leave him in the cistern, he'll get out some way. So let's sell him to these Ishmaelites." And that's what they did. Not a good day for Joseph, was it? This pampered son was now a slave. Now let me ask you a question. Do you think as Joseph had his hands tied and was being led along behind one of those camels of the Ishmaelites, do you think he said, "Thank you, God, I can see You're going to work all this out in my life. I can see Your hand in this just as clear as day. I know You're going to work this out for good." I think not. And some of you are in situations where it's hard to see how in the world God's going to work this thing out for good. Here's a second thing we learn from this passage. Sometimes God uses unjust treatment to put us on our journey of purpose. No doubt Joseph had many questions swirling in his mind. But after a while, things started to look up. Some positive things started happening in Joseph's life. Look at chapter 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. And the Lord was with Joseph as he was in the cistern, as he was following those camels, the Lord still is with Joseph. And he prospered, Joseph did, and he lived in the house of the Egyptian master. And when the master saw the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. Not a bad position. The Egyptian official had left everything in Joseph's care. There he is in charge. Things are going well until an episode with Potiphar's wife. Look at the last of verse 6 in chapter 39. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. And then one day, he went into the house to attend his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and he ran from the house. It's said that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And Potiphar's wife was determined to do away with the man who had refused her. Look at verse 16. She kept his cloak beside her until her master came home, and then she told him this story. "This Hebrew slave you brought to us, it came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Joseph obeyed, and he's put in prison. In a tempting situation, he not only doesn't yield to temptation, but he runs from it. And yet, he's put in prison because of it. You ever been in a situation where you were unjustly accused? Is God in control during those times? Is He working in your life to get you someplace you need to be, to teach you something you need to learn? Again, the hand of God is upon Joseph through this story. And here's another principle. Joseph's in prison now. And God uses some human acquaintances to move him on in his journey. Look at chapter 40. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in the custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned these two men to Joseph, and he attended them. So Joseph is in charge of the king's men now. After a while, they have a dream, and God gave Joseph the insight to interpret their dream. The dream was bad news for the baker. Joseph said, "Sorry, but the king's going to hang you." And the news was good news for the chief cupbearer. He was released, as Joseph told him, "You're going to be released and you're going to be restored to the position that you had." Look at chapter 40, verses 14 and 15. Joseph told the cupbearer this, "When all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of prison. For I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put into a dungeon. So when you get out, remember me." Look at verse 23. Chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Ever had someone forget you? Something they promised you? Does God use broken promises to work His purpose in our lives? Joseph remained in prison for 2 more years. Convinced, I'm sure, that he would never get out. Then look at chapter 41, verse 9. The king, the Pharaoh, had a dream that he couldn't interpret, that no one could interpret. And look at verse 9. I love this verse. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my own shortcomings." Today I'm reminded that I forgot something. I forgot to mention something that's probably pretty important here. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard, and each of us had a dream that same night, and each dream had a meaning. And now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dreams. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was hanged. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. And when he shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. So now he's before Pharaoh. Pharaoh tells him his dreams, and he says, "You're the one who can interpret them." And then Joseph says this, "I can't, but God can." And here we see a change in Joseph's attitude. The spoiled, rotten kid who was hated by his brothers now has been taken through some things in his life where his attitude's changed. "I can't do it, but God can." He tells the Pharaoh the dream. There's going to be 7 years of plenty. There's going to be 7 years of want. Here's a plan for you to get through these next 14 years, for Egypt to get through these 14 years. And Pharaoh said, "I can't think of anyone better to lead us through this than you." And so Joseph is placed in the position second only to Pharaoh himself. God is moving him on this journey. Just as Joseph had said, 7 years of plenty came, and then 7 years of famine came. Look at the end of verse 57 of chapter 41. "And all the countries came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe in the world." Now we're getting to the end of the story, and here's another principle we need to learn. Family experience God used to prepare Joseph for his purpose. Unjust treatment God used to put him on his journey of purpose. Human acquaintances God used to move him along on that journey. And here God uses difficult times. God needed to change Joseph's location, and so he did that. He needed to change Joseph's heart, and so he did that. He needed to change Joseph's position, not a shepherd, but second in command. And so through a famine, he puts him in charge. Look at chapter 42, verse 1 and 2. "While Jacob, Joseph's father, learned there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, 'Why do you just keep looking at each other?' He continued, 'I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy for us so that we may live and not die." We're going to die unless we get some food. There's grain in Egypt. Go down there and get some. And the next chapters report how Joseph's brothers came for grain. It had been 22 years. He recognized them. They didn't recognize him. In the next chapters, he tests them to see if they're still treating his father well and treating his brother Benjamin with honor and respect. And then over in chapter 45, look at verse 1, he lets them know who he is. Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Now listen to what Joseph says here. "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come close to me.' And when they had done so, he said, 'I'm your brother Joseph, the one you sold to Egypt. And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it had a purpose. It was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5, There will not be plowing and reaping, but God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives from great deliverance." God used all that to get Joseph to a place of leadership, to save a family from famine, to move them to Egypt, and there for the next 400 years, that little clan of Israel grows into a powerful nation of 2 million until God takes them and delivers them across the Red Sea and to their land of promise and to the country they still possess today. Now, you don't have the benefit of fast-forwarding to the end of your story, but when you're there, and if you could do it today, you would see the same things in your life as you see in the life of Joseph. How God brought difficult times to mold your heart. Maybe you're in that difficult time now. How God changed your geography to put you in a place where He wanted you to be. And maybe you're going through a change like that now. How maybe there was a time when you were obedient and punished for it. And you're thinking, "God, that doesn't quite click with me." God's saying, "Hang on, just hang on, trust me. I'm in control. I have a purpose for your life. Great purpose for your life. You can't do what I need you to do where you are now, where your heart is, where your mind is. So trust me. I'm in control." Relax. Rest in Him. Storm may be blowing all around you, but He is in control. If you're following Him, if you love Him, that's the promise, isn't it? He's working all things out for you, just like He did Joseph. And whatever you're going through, He is going to use it. He doesn't waste our time. Whatever you're going through, He is using it to make you into the man and the woman He needs you to be to fulfill His purpose in your life. And there's nothing greater than being able to come to the end of our life and say, "You know what? I lived in God's purpose for me."
And please stay with us. Just ahead, Ron returns with a look at our next time together. First, a word about our offer of Ron's book, Ignite. In its pages, he leads you step by step on a spiritual journey to a heart ignited by grace. Along the way, he reveals God's purpose in your stresses, pain, and tough times. By matching today's struggles with King David's tumultuous life, Ron paints a vivid picture of God meeting you wherever you are. He assures you that God is using your loneliness, brokenness, disappointment, and emptiness to fan the flames of faith in your heart. Ignite is yours for a gift of any amount. It's available at ronmoore.org. Again, that web address is ronmoore.org. Or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. Your gift today will help keep the journey on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now, let's rejoin Ron for a preview of our next broadcast.
Some of you are going through challenging times. And I just want to encourage you, God is not wasting your time. He is working on your heart. He is preparing you for the next assignment. He's going to stretch you. He's going to mold you. He's going to bend you. He's going to cause you to change your heart into the heart He needs to take you to the next step. Those are not pleasant times. Moses did not enjoy 40 years in Midian, but God prepared him there. And so He's preparing you.
We hope you can join us for that message next time. And we invite you to order a copy of Ron's book, Ignite, to help fan the flames of faith in your heart. Ignite is yours for a gift of any amount. You can order it online at ronmoore.org. Or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. We also invite you to have a look at our church website at biblechapel.org. There you'll find information about our worship services and special events, along with Ron's recent sermons, devotional thoughts, and podcasts. Again, that address is biblechapel.org. Biblechapel.org. And if the journey has made a difference in your spiritual life, won't you invite your friends and family to listen as well? We'll thank you, and we think they will too. Also, please keep in mind that the journey relies on your generous donations to remain on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Your gift today will be deeply appreciated. You can give at ronmoore.org, or you may call 724-731-2018. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join Ron next time as we walk together on the journey.